Hello, and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. So today's podcast, number 892, the topic is mindset, and the title is Topics from a Recent Client Consultation. I like this kind of idea because it's kind of a hodgepodge of ideas and concepts that we'll be talking through. So a little bit of nutrition, a little bit of training, a little bit of mindset. I just think it's fun to kind of get a variety of things every now and then. One of my favorite books is Tools of Titans, which is a summary of interviews by Tim Ferriss. He runs a podcast, pretty popular podcast. And he has a book that summarizes within like two or three pages his favorite interviews. And it's pretty much just random topics like throughout, and it's just fun to learn a little bit about everything, and that kind of soothes my interest nature when I like to just hear the nuances of random things. So if somebody talks about like the details of scuba diving, I find that really fun and interesting versus like the details of the hardest like moving ballet. It's just cool to hear what goes into different things in the world. And some of the commonalities would be like, you know, consistency and dedication are required for you to be, you know, successful. You know, an ounce of luck here and there, but mixed with, you know, a pound of preparation. It's just really fun to hear kind of randomness and then what is consistent within all the randomness. Speaking of rambling, let's get into this. So I got into a consultation. Some of the clients I work with, we do Zoom consultations every week. So they live remotely, like different way away from me. So some are, you know, still within the state, but not local. Some are across the state, some are in other countries. So it's very fun. And I love the variety of getting to work with different people for different goals. And this one, we talked about a couple different things. So one of them was we talked about the need for fruits and vegetables in their diet. They felt that they made the statement that they felt they needed to increase their fruits and vegetables. And I asked them just out of curiosity what made them feel that way. And their answer was, well, I don't really eat any. So if I don't eat any fruits, I feel like I probably should have some fruit. So we talked about that there's this belief in society that you're healthy if you eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. Well, that absolutely is not true. It is a piece of the truth, but it's not the entirety of the truth. So a healthy diet can include fruits and vegetables, but so can a healthy diet not include those. An unhealthy diet can include fruits and vegetables, but an unhealthy diet can also not. So we said that pretty much the benefits of fruits and vegetables would be is the balancing out of vitamins and minerals. So let's just look at three food sources. Let's just say fruit, meat, and vegetables. There's going to be more like minerals in meat than there might be like say in fruit. So for example, meat might have more like zinc, magnesium, iron, whereas a fruit might have more vitamin B's and C's and things like that. So if you take all of the foods that there are in the world and you clump them into categories, you have like the typical like my food pyramid, which is now called my food plate and it's shown differently. But most people in their 20s, 30s, 40s are going to be reflecting to the my food pyramid. And they're going to know that there's categories of food. So they're going to think, okay, for me to be healthy, I have to eat something from each category. Well, an example why that sometimes doesn't exist, or why that's unnecessary, is if somebody's getting ready for, like, well, let's say I have a client wanting to build muscle mass, and they're struggling to eat enough food in their diet. So they want to eat a lot, but they're not used to eating a lot of volume. So we would say, okay, well, if you feel the need to every meal have a cup of vegetables and like, let's just say like every big meal. So breakfast, lunch, dinner, let's just say three meals a day. You're supposed to have vegetables. And then in your snacks, you're supposed to have a piece of fruit. Well, for the volume, food volume that the fruits and vegetables take within the space of a meal. So if you were to think of a plate being a third carbohydrates like potatoes, pasta, rice, beans, things like that. A third is like a meat source. and then a third is a vegetable. That third of the plate, being vegetables, doesn't have a lot of calories for the amount of the plate that it's taking up. So a cup of vegetables will have a lot less calories than a cup of traditional carbohydrates. So potatoes, pasta, rice, beans, things like that. So if they're struggling to eat more, to get in more calories, rather than trying to force them to force feed greater, larger sizes of meals, they can look at what they are eating and can they swap low calorie dense foods for higher calorie dense foods. So for example, let's say we have a plate of, you know, chicken breast, mashed potatoes, and green beans. Well, if they scrape off the green beans and double the portion of mashed potatoes, they're going to get a lot more calories. But traditionally, we would think, well, that's unhealthy because they're not eating vegetables. Well, what do we want from vegetables? We want vitamins and minerals, whatever they would offer. And then also, it does help with quote-unquote roughage. It helps with you being able to go to the bathroom because the body can't really break down vegetables as well as it breaks down other food. So it kind of helps to kind of force material through the intestines. Well, you could take a multivitamin supplement to cover the lost vitamins and minerals. And you can take a fiber supplement or digestive supplement if you want to cover over the vegetables. Now, if somebody doesn't have trouble eating vegetables, are the vegetables better than a multivitamin supplement and a fiber supplement? You could debate that. And the reason why I say you could debate that is we would traditionally think it's more healthy to eat the whole foods than it would be the supplements. But is there any proof to that belief? Is there any proof that a diet supplemented to cover vegetables is more or less or equal in health to a diet with vegetables? We don't really have definitive proof of that. So I have a master's in human nutrition. I have read a crap ton of journals in my spare time and through college. And there are articles you can find that say yay or nay in every freaking direction. But in general, we would say, okay, if I want to deem something as healthy, I want to deem a meal or a diet style as healthy, we would look at blood work. So what's their cholesterol? What's their blood glucose? You know, what are their blood values? Well, there's no blood value difference in a diet that doesn't have, you know, 3 to 4 servings of vegetables and 2 to 3 servings of fruit, but is covered over with supplements. So a multivitamin and say a, you know, fiber supplement or digestive supplement. The people who choose the supplements over fruits and vegetables can have just as fine blood work as people who eat the fruits and vegetables. So when we say one is healthier than the other, what are we using to define the word healthy? If we're using blood values, then that statement is not true. People can have great blood values and never eat a piece of fruit. People can have great blood values and never eat vegetables. You might say, okay, well, if it's equal wash, I'm going to go ahead and eat the whole foods because I just feel better with that. Great, fine, okay. If that's your choice and that's what makes you feel good, do it. I'm not saying don't. But what I told that client was, is really the fruits and vegetables, what we would look for is, what do they provide us? And do we need to get that only from fruits and vegetables, or can we get it from another source? So for this client, we actually wanted them to have the fruits and vegetables. They had a low-calorie day in their plan, and we know that if they eat low-calorically dense foods, they can eat a lot more volume of food on that day, feel fuller in their meals, feel like they got to eat a lot, even though it didn't add to a lot of calories. But I could have a client, as stated, who's trying to gain size, and they're having trouble eating enough calories. If I tried to increase the volume of their food, they just can't do it. So we can replace fruits and vegetables with more calorically dense foods, which tend to be more like traditional carbs and more like animal products like meats and things. they can get the size they want. They can gain, you know, muscle tissue. They can get where they want to get. And then as they get used to that increase in volume of food, if they want to, then they could add back in fruits and vegetables. So it might only be a period of time, you know, maybe 12, 16, 20 weeks that they would reduce fruits and vegetables to get their calorie count up, grow where they want to grow, and then reintroduce fruits and vegetables. So just because we're doing something now doesn't mean we have to be doing it tomorrow. So there are stages and seasons to what we do. But I just thought that was a fun conversation in the sense that the client stated they felt they needed to increase fruits and vegetables, and we had to break down the question of why. So for that person, great, I'm awesome, they're doing it. It fits our goals. For other people, it wouldn't. So be careful about what you believe you need to do or what you quote-unquote should do. What are the facts and what's best for you, your goals? Okay. So another thing we talked about was low-calorie days doesn't mean low-food days. So one of the things we're working with this client is a caloric cycling. So they have some days that are higher calorie, some days are medium calorie, and some days are lower calorie. The benefit of this, if you just do lower calories all the time, you will lose some body fat initially, but the body will learn to regulate itself to meet the lower caloric need. So if I went from 2,000 calories to 1,500 calories, my body will learn how to run itself off of only 1,500 calories. It'll reduce the caloric investment into what it believes is non-necessary processes. So you're skin might be a little drier than normal. Maybe your hair will be a little slower to grow. Nails will be slower to grow. Those are the external things we typically see, but there's a lot of internal stuff happening as well. But once the body regulates itself and learns how to run off of only 1,500 calories, there's no longer a caloric deficit causing fat loss. The body learned how to run off of 1,500. It doesn't need to use body fat. So then all of a sudden you'd say, crap, I'm not getting results. I need to reduce my calories even more. So I'm going to go from 1,500 down to 1,200. Well, the body starts to reduce its processes again. Now, the whole time it's reducing its processes, it does not like doing that. It knows it's less than optimal. So it gives you strong cravings. You have low energy. You basically feel like crap. You try to mask that with caffeine. You mask that with just staying busy. You mask that with just, oh, I can do this, I'm strong enough, brr, 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 brr. But eventually the body wins. We break our diet and we say, screw this 1,200 stuff, I'm going back to 2,000. Well, your body used to run off of 2,000. Now it only runs off of 1,200. So while the body's waiting to ramp back up to 2,000, you're gaining body fat. All of a sudden, your body kind of grows back up, gets metabolism, gets back up to 2,000, but you negated a lot of the fat loss that you got through the process of getting from 2,000 down to 1,200. Because as the body was growing back up to 2,000, it was accumulating excess. So this is where we see caloric cycling leading to body fat and body weight cycling. So somebody might lose 30 pounds and gain 20 pounds back. And it's through this process. So what we were doing is we were doing caloric cycling to where we give the body a low calorie day, say 1,500 calories. But we have another day that's 1,800 and another day that's 2,300. We know the client's weekly average. And we'll say the weekly average is 1,850. We know that throughout the week, as an average, 1,850 is below their maintenance level. Meaning it's going to drive fat loss on a global weekly scale. But the days at 2,300, we don't get any fat loss. The days at 1,500, we get a lot of fat loss. But the days of 2,300 prevent the body from down-regulating to 1,500. You shock it with the 1,500 day, then it starts to go, holy shit, what was that? You know, I had to get rid of a lot of body fat. I don't know if I want to do that again. But then right before it starts to go down in calories, we all of a sudden give it 2,300 calories. And it goes, okay, well, I guess I don't need to reduce my metabolism. I don't need to reduce the body processes. You gave me enough calories today. I don't need to downregulate. So then all of a sudden we shock it again with a 1,500 and it dumps off a bunch of body fat. It says, damn it anyhow. I just had to lose a lot of body fat. Do I need to regulate to this? Then all of a sudden we give it an 1800 day, and it goes, oh, well, I guess I don't need to regulate down to 1500 or give me 1800 calories. So you're basically leaving the body kind of confused, meaning it's never fully able to protect itself against a 1500 calorie day. Meaning that on those days, we get huge chunks of fat loss in regards to our global goal of fat loss. So that's the benefits of caloric cycling. This client found, well, what do I do on the low calorie days? How do I modify what I normally eat on, say, a 2300 calorie day to now only eat 1500 calories in the same number of meals? We still want to have the same meal count, because that makes sure that the body doesn't start downregulating its metabolism as well. So we don't want to go from 5 meals to 3 meals, because then it starts to kind of play games with the body and it changes our digestive system. It changes a lot of like our daily routine and our energy levels. So we want to keep the same meal times, but we want to reduce. So typically the first thing you would do, if you're only reducing a small amount, say you're reducing 5 to 10%. So you might be going from 2,000 down to 1,800. Well, on that day, you can probably stick with the same foods, but just slightly less of each food. So maybe you do a small reduction in calories of, you know, what you eat every single meal. Then you get to your 10% reduction. Pretty easy. Just same foods, just a little less. Well, if I want to have a bigger reduction, if I want to have a 25% reduction, say from 2,000 down to 1,500, if I try to eat 25% less of all of my foods, it might feel like you're eating nothing. That kind of bums you out. It mentally messes with you because you don't feel like you're eating a lot of food. So therefore, all of a sudden at night, you feel like you want to eat more because you could visually see how little you ate. So the psychology of that messes you up. Well, one of the ways to combat against this is to actually change what you eat on the lowest calorie day. So you can swap calorie-dense foods for foods that are low calorically dense. So for example, instead of having the mashed potatoes, you would have all the green beans. So if my meal was typically chicken, mashed potatoes, and green beans, I might just have chicken and a shit ton of green beans. I could probably have 3 cups of green beans to equal 1 cup of mashed potatoes. You'll be eating so many damn green beans, it'll be coming out of your ears. So I've had clients on their lowest calorie day, when we make changes to the actual foods that they eat, tell me that they're so full, they can't eat all of it. Which is hysterical because it's the lowest calorie day. But it's the highest volume of food day. So they don't feel like they're starving on the low calorie days. They're actually annoyed at how much they have to eat. Which is great. So they're losing body fat and complaining about how much they're eating, rather than losing body fat and complaining that they're not eating at all. So that's a neat concept to think of when we think of food changes. The benefits of caloric cycling and the benefits of how to change foods, understanding that we can play with caloric density to influence food volume. So that's just some fun food for thought. That didn't even mean that. That was a good pun. Then what we got into talking about was their training, and we talked about how they really enjoyed their structure. Their structure has a glute specific warm-up with a core specific exercise like challenge, and then they warm up their bigger movement. For this client, we're working on hip strength as it relates to overall health, and kind of there's a bunch of other little issues and things we're working on, but glute strength and hip positional strength is of high importance. So that's going to be the first thing we do in their training when they have the most energy, the most attention to detail, the most oomph to give to it. And we're also going to include those concepts in their other workload, but we're going to isolate that concept and give it high attention in the beginning. So they'll have like a glute-specific warm-up, they'll have a core warm-up, and then if in the next main area of their workout, they're going to do a heavy squat, they would actually warm up their squats. So their first circuit would be glutes, core, and a squat warm-up. 3 rounds. So maybe with a squat warm-up, they squat an empty bar. You know, first set. Maybe second set, they add a 10 to 5 to each side, so that's 75 pounds. Maybe the third set, they add 30 pounds again, they go up to 105 pounds. And then by the first warm-up set of the main circuit, they can already be at 135 pounds. So, for example, let's say their workout was glute isolation, core work, and squat warm-up. They do 3 rounds of that. Then their main circuit would be a squat variation, a hinge variation, like RDLs with dumbbells, or stiff leg deadlifts, or even single leg stiff leg deadlifts, something like that. Okay. So if they're going to do a squat that has both legs on the floor, we typically will do a hinge that's a unilateral hinge. So that way we get a unilateral component paired with a both feet on the floor component. Then we'll do a push and a pull, maybe, dumbbell overhead press and dumbbell bent over row, something like that. Well, how many warm-ups do they really need for a dumbbell overhead press? Probably one or two. How many warm-ups do they need for a dumbbell bent over row? Probably one or two. How many warm-ups do they need for a dumbbell stiff leg deadlifts? Probably one or two. But if we want them to do a big squat, how are they going to get to big numbers in only one or two warm-ups, right? So if they wouldn't have squatted, if they wouldn't have done the squat warm-ups with their first circuit, they would all of a sudden have to do a crap ton of warm-ups before they could even start their second circuit. They would have to squat the empty bar 75 pounds, 105 pounds, 135, and then be ready maybe at 155. So they might have to do 4 warm-up sets of squats whenever they only have 1 or 2 warm-ups of the other exercises. So by getting their squat warm-ups within their first circuit, they can get 3 of the warm-ups done then, and then do 1 or 2 warm-ups while they do 1 or 2 warm-ups of the other exercises. And then all of a sudden, boom, everything's starting. All their first circuit of that first working set of the second circuit is all starting at the exact same time. It's a much faster way to go through a workout because you don't do the first circuit, then have 15 minutes of warming up a big lift before you can get into your second circuit. So that workout structure, we had talked about how they really enjoyed that structure and they felt like they could get a lot of work done in just 45 minutes. This person lifts before they go to work. And they said, man, I'm really liking the way this format is working. It really fits into my time frame. It really lets me feel like I'm getting more out of that main lift. I don't have to rush the warm-ups and be exhausted. I don't have to try to skip warm-ups, but then feel heavy and my joints hurt or not fully prepared. So that is something you can consider in your own training. If you have a big lift in your training, power lifters, by the way, you guys screw this up all the time, is you would say, okay, I'm going to do my warm-ups. I'm going to do my stretches, my warm-up routine, and then I'm going to go do 7 freaking warm-up sets while I sit around for 7 minutes in between each set, and I wonder why I'm in the gym for 2.5-3 hours. Because you're being inefficient. So let's just take a quick, easy example. Say you're doing machine adductor, machine abductor to warm up your hips. Well, do a set of each and then go squat the empty bar. Do your second set of the machines, then go squat your second set of warm-ups for the squat. So you circuit in the warm-up of the main lift into your first circuit, your preparatory circuit. You'll find then that you're more warmed up and ready to go faster into your main lift. And then all of a sudden, you're saving 20, 30 minutes in your workout. It is very significant. So I'd recommend you give that a try. It's a very helpful structure. Then, the last thing we talked about was the benefits of working with a coach. Now, this is going to sound like commercial. I don't care because I'm still going to say it because it's still true. Is we had talked about the benefits of her and I talking was I am the physical representation of her nutrition and training. I'm the physical representation of what her body must do to change. She represents what her body wants to do and what it's comfortable with. But what was nice was as we talked, we said, hey, this is what I like about my workout. I like the overall structure. But for example, there was another type of movement that we had in there called an ipsilateral row, which has very specific positional cues. There were benefits to that exercise, but it isn't the only exercise that gives you those benefits. So they stated that they felt like that was so restrictive in terms of the cues and positioning that they kind of felt like bummed by it, like demotivated from it, and just kind of frustrated. Well, the benefits of working with a coach is we can change that. We can still get the benefits of what we wanted that exercise to do for us, but we can do it in a way that doesn't demotivate us and feels more comfortable. So what we talked about was awesome is that we can fit her nutrition and her training to her. She doesn't have to try to fit to a pre-scripted program. So she said, like, it's trying to fit, you know, a round peg in a round hole, you know, or square peg in a square hole. She doesn't have to try to fit herself to a program. The benefits of working with a coach is the program can fit to you. This creates more excitement, more motivation, more longevity, more adherence. It improves the overall program because we get it as close to what she already does, but still needing the things that we need to do to move forward. So if her meal times are currently best at, say, 8, 11, and 2, but you're following a nutrition program that wants you to eat at 9, 12, and 3, that's going to be friction. There's going to be friction there because that's not your best times. Let's say that you prefer certain foods. Like you like pasta. But the program you're on says you can't eat pasta, you have to eat rice. There's no physical adaptational difference. You're going to look the exact freaking same. You're going to lose the exact same amount of fat. As long as the calories are controlled, there's no damn bit of difference between eating pasta and rice. None. But if your program doesn't tell you that, here you are trying to force yourself to eat rice when you'd rather eat pasta. And it sucks because that program isn't telling you that it doesn't matter. That program was written for people who like to eat rice because maybe that person liked to eat rice. Maybe they've never experimented with exchanging the macronutrient and seeing what change it made. So too often people try to fit themselves to a program. Whenever you can work with a coach in a month, two, or three, and figure out formats that you can use for the rest of your freaking life that are fit to you. So I write templates, we call them in training, is a training template saying, here's your goal, here's you, here's the equipment you have. Here's a workout structure that should work best for you. We try it for 1, 2, maybe 3 months. The person figures out how to use that format and how it works and what kind of categories each exercise fits into, and then they can use that continuously on their own. So I have clients that I've wrote templates for that they've been following them for 2 or 3, if not more than that, years. So we work together for 3 months, and then for 3 freaking years, they have a program that's written for them that they can use to mold to them rather than them having to mold to it. So there are benefits to a coach other than somebody just telling you what to do and what not to do and whether you're doing this right or doing that right. So too often I'll hear people, especially young people, especially young males, they'll say, well, I know what I'm doing. Nah, So they'll go through, they'll try to hammer into this program, hammer into that program. They're trying to change this, change that. And what they would benefit from is somebody coming in and saying, hey, listen, this is the format that's going to work best for your goals. This is where you need to focus your attention. Stop bouncing around the right thing. And here it is. Focus on this. And I think we all can benefit from that, and even outside of the gym. We have a million things that we want to do well at in life. And life throws us around, and it's our job to try to find the yin and yang, up and down, left and right. How do we always go back to where we want to be based on life pushing us in every direction? So we want to have as narrowed of variances as possible. That's what a template does. That's what a coach does. They help you narrow the variances. So I just wanted to throw that out there, that there's a lot of benefit to a coach. Even if you're a trainer, like half my clients are trainers, and they have a trainer. Why does a trainer have a trainer? Because even they need training. Everybody needs help. Everybody needs coaching on their blind spots. Everybody needs help with extra ideas. The best athletes in the world pay the most for coaches. The best athletes in the world, Tiger Woods in golf, Michael Jordan in basketball, whoever the hell is the most best baseball player, I don't even know, okay? They all have coaches, and often they pay for extra coaches outside of their team coach. They pay the most money of anyone in the world for coaching. And they're the best athletes because every detail matters. And at their level, to get better, the smallest of the smallest details matter. So they want an extra set of eyes, an extra set of knowledge. They want someone on their side helping them find that. So don't feel bad about getting a coach. Don't think you're above a coach. Don't think that having a coach makes you weak. The best athletes in the world have coaches. The best business people in the world have mentors. That's a coach. Two brains are better than one. So don't be afraid to have a coach. There's a ton of benefit to them. Okay, well, like I said, it's kind of a hodgepodge of stuff, but I thought that was kind of fun to go through and just see like what we would discuss in a training, a consultation with a client. So you can see it's kind of all over the place. We talk about nutrition, we talk about training, we talk about mindset, we talk about lifestyle, we talk about accountability, just anything and everything. Anything they need to be narrowed in their variances and stay on track. Cool. Well, hopefully that was helpful. Hopefully that was fun. If you like that kind of podcast, let me know. Our email is brutalirongym@gmail.com. You can always make a comment on whatever social media, whatever podcast platform you're on. Just let us know if you think this is a good one. You know, click like. That helps us know. When people click like on the podcast, it helps me understand which ones they like the most, and therefore I'll, you know, steer in that direction more. So the more feedback you give us, the more it helps us create a podcast specific to what you want to learn. So thank you to those who reach out. Thank you to those who speak up. It's extremely helpful and really enjoyable. I like knowing at least one person's watching, or I mean listening. So thank you very much. Cool. Okay. Well, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. If you like today's podcast, click like. If you want to share it, please share it. It helps a lot if you share the podcast. It really helps us grow. Also, if you like this information, you can find more from us on our social media channels on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter under the name Brutal Iron Gym. And if you have any questions, feedback, or suggestions, we'd always love to hear from you. Always. This podcast is for you, so we want to know what you want to learn about. You can tell us at our email, brutalirongym@gmail.com. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.